Thank you so much, John. And it is great to see you somewhere other than the West Side Supermarket on Broadway and 110th. thanks so much, everybody, for coming out this morning. I'm just amazed at the turnout on such an incredibly cold morning. Who knew that we would come to New Orleans and we'd be shivering? But anyway, last year I presented the initial findings of the research on religiously sponsored hospitals, their growth in the U.S., and as John mentioned, there are copies of that report in the back. This is a sort of follow-up to that report, which is going to focus on one of the recommendations we had in the report, which was that we need to figure out how to use state hospital oversight laws to protect access to reproductive health services in the face of this consolidation of the health industry. A little background on MergerWatch. We created it in 1997 to prevent the elimination of reproductive health services at secular, so non-religious, hospitals that were merging with religiously sponsored hospitals that restrict care. And since then, I and my staff have worked with community activists, physicians, nurses, and other folks on more than 110 hospital merger cases all across the country. I think we're up to 39 states that we've worked in. Our approaches include public education, community organizing, putting pressure on hospital executives, and when possible, using state hospital oversight laws to advocate for the preservation of reproductive health services. We've come to have a special focus on Catholic hospitals. We started out focusing on religiously sponsored hospitals because some Baptist hospitals, some types of Lutheran hospitals, sometimes Adventist hospitals have restrictions on reproductive health care, but it really, the problem is primarily with the Catholic hospitals. And that's because they are governed by the ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare services, which are issued by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And you may have seen in the news recently that they've just voted to add a bunch of more rules at the direction of the Vatican. These ERDs, ethical and religious directives, ERDs for short, prohibit the provision of abortions, contraception, sterilizations, infertility services, safer sex counseling, genetic testing if what the patient might decide would be to terminate the pregnancy. It's a wide range of restrictions. There are many reports of failure to appropriately treat reproductive health emergencies at Catholic hospitals. That's why our report from last December was called Miscarriage of Medicine, because it focused on so many of the miscarriage cases that are being treated very badly when women end up at Catholic hospital ERs. And the focus of this morning's presentation is what happens when Catholic hospitals form partnerships with non-Catholic hospitals, mergers, affiliations, acquisitions. Usually there is a demand from the Catholic partner that the merged entity adopt Catholic restrictions and eliminate reproductive care that violates the ERDs. So typically, what is ejected from the non-Catholic hospital in one of these partnerships is abortions, sterilizations, contraception, infertility services, and as I've mentioned, a number of other services are affected. Now, I want you to take a look at this chart. It's from Irving Levin Associates. 1998, you remember I said we started the MergerWatch project in 1997, and that was because you can see in 1998, and there was, if I could get it back this way, that was also true in 1997, a high level of deals, partnerships, and numbers of hospitals being affected. And if you look at the trend, you can see we're back there right now in late 2013, 2014, with a really high number of deals going on, and the deals are involving higher numbers of hospitals because we're seeing little regional systems that already have four or five hospitals and they're merging with other systems, and so more and more hospitals are being affected. At the same time, look at the number of hospitals that are joining these health systems. And I see my chart went off the page over there, but you can see the line that an increasing number of hospitals are in these systems. So the era of the standalone hospital, community hospital, it's disappearing. They're endangered financially. So with all this going on, what's happening to who owns the hospitals? And as you can see from this chart from our report, the Catholic nonprofits are zooming up 16% over the previous 10 years. Other religious nonprofits dropping considerably. Secular nonprofits dropping. Public hospitals dropping. You probably all have lost a public hospital in your own area. And then look at the for-profits. So we have the for-profit hospitals and the Catholic hospitals increasing and everybody else dropping. And that's a really unfortunate from the reproductive health standpoint trend, because the for-profits look at the bottom line, so they're eager to eliminate maternity care, for example, if they think it isn't making enough money. And the Catholics have the restrictions I mentioned. Remember the line I showed you with hospitals joining health systems? I've shown you just the first 12 of the top 25 health systems in the U.S. And the ones that are shaded in the sort of beige color are Catholic. So you can see, this was from 2011. Since then, Catholic Health East, number 8, and Trinity Health, number 11, merged. And so they are now way up higher on the list. So we're seeing even the Catholic systems merging with each other to gain more and more market power and ability to demand high prices from insurance companies. So given this dramatically shifting hospital landscape, how can we protect reproductive health services? There are really two main systems for government review of proposed hospital transactions. At the federal level, there's the Federal Trade Commission, which looks at this primarily from the anti-competitive standpoint, right? If all these hospitals are merging, then they gain more market power, then they can charge higher prices. It's a monopoly, right? As if it were any other type of a hardware store or whatever. It's the same with hospitals. And then there's state-level regulatory oversight, primarily by either the state attorney general in your state or through what's called certificate of need review. And I'm not going to talk further about the FTC. I can certainly answer questions about it afterwards. I'm going to focus on the state-level regulatory oversight. So first, let's look at attorneys general. They traditionally have the power to investigate the activities of nonprofits, and they also are supposed to be protectors of communities served by nonprofits. So typically their role in states includes intervening when a nonprofit is being converted to for-profit. So if your community hospital is bought up by Tenet Healthcare, for example, which is one of the big for-profit chains, they will intervene to protect the mission. And charitable asset law. This is a feature of law that basically says if John Santelli gave money to a Planned Parenthood and Planned Parenthood decided to be acquired by some Right to Life group, John would have a beef because he gave money to Planned Parenthood for reproductive health care and now it's being converted to a different mission. So that's what charitable asset is about. And they also review, investigate, and challenge mergers of all types as state-level enforcers of antitrust law. Now let's look at certificate of need review. The states that are in blue here have some type of certificate of need review requirement, and I'll go into this in a little more depth. But also look at the states in yellow that don't have certificate of need. Now, you may be wondering, well, what about California? They must have something, right? They do. They have the Attorney General does the review in California. But some of these other states, like Texas, They don't have any attorney general review, and they don't have any CON either. So we're really in trouble in states like Texas. Certificate of need, those of you who know your health industry history will recall that state CON review was originally designed to help contain healthcare costs, to stop the medical arms race where we're having more and more hospitals built, hospitals buying fancy equipment, driving up prices. Now it's the primary vehicle that we could use to protect community access to services when hospitals downsize, close, or merge. However, state CON laws and processes vary widely, and some are more suited to what we want to do with them than others. We've been doing nationwide study of certificate of need laws in states. We found that 36 states and D.C. have CON laws, but three of them only apply to nursing homes, long-term care facilities. Arkansas specifically exempts religious health care facilities from any review. And 13 states have neither CON nor any alternative type of review like the Attorney General. We looked at what transactions are reviewed and what is assessed in the state certificate of need processes. And these are typical criteria. You can see that to trigger a review, it's the establishment of a new healthcare facility, changing the services, transferring ownerships of hospitals. And then the standards for review are typically things like need for the project, compatibility with established state healthcare plans, will the facility serve medically underserved people, availability of healthcare services in the area, and quality of care. So you could see that some of those would be quite useful to us if we were going to try to intervene using certificate of need to protect access to services. Then we looked at, well, how does the public know if there's one of these mergers being negotiated? And we found that 25 states have some type of public notification, but it's often quite obscure and hard to find. It can be in the legal notices section of some obscure newspaper. It can be on state government oversights, but websites, but it's often very hard to find it on the State Department of Health website. We went ahead and graded state websites for the ease and content of their material on certificate of need. And we found 14 states that were pretty good, 9 that were not too bad, 6 states, including my home state of New York. It's really hard to navigate around the CON information on the state website. And you're probably not surprised that Louisiana got really low grades. And in fact, New Jersey was the worst, thanks to Chris Christie and folks like him. How are consumer views sought in these processes? 12 states actually require a public hearing on a proposed hospital merger. 24 states allow it if somebody requests. And then there are other means of public participation that are in some of these laws, like submitting written testimony. So I wanted to offer a couple examples of states that are good and states that are not so good. Connecticut has really, really strong certificate of need review. We've worked with the Connecticut Commission on the Status of Women on a number of hospital merger cases and had really a lot of success in protecting access to reproductive health services. The Commission on the Status of Women has intervener status and can actually subpoena witnesses and require testimony and grill people from the hospitals. And it's not perfect, but it's wonderful compared to many other states. You're probably not surprised that Texas is one of the worst states for state oversight. I've cited just a few of the recent mergers that have been going on there. Catholic Health Initiatives acquiring Episcopal Health System, then a Memorial Hospital System. These mergers are losing reproductive health services with almost no notice or oversight whatsoever. There's not enough opportunity for consumers to intervene. In some states, we're working to try to strengthen certificate of need laws that are a little weak, and Washington State is one of them. There's a great coalition out there, with the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, a number of groups that are trying to address a wave of proposed Catholic-secular hospital mergers. And one of the things we discovered is that they're being structured as affiliations instead of sales or mergers, because that allows them to, like, fly under the radar of the Certificate of Need process in Washington. So under pressure from this coalition, state officials strengthened CON regulations to close the gap. The hospital association then sued and overturned the regulations. The judge said they have to be put in through law, and so we'll see what happens there. But still in effect, though, is one new provision that I think you'll find interesting. It requires all hospitals to post on their websites and give to the DOH their policies on reproductive health care. Also, end-of-life care, non-discrimination, and admissions. Some of the results so far are pretty vague. Here's the one from Providence Health Services, which basically says, oh, they'll follow their best medical judgment and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of a bunch of double talk, as you can see if you look at it. By contrast, some of the others are quite more direct. Here's the Franciscan Health System. At no time may direct actions to terminate life be performed or permitted. And this applies not only to reproductive health, but Washington is a death with dignity state, so it prohibits any involvement with physician, what they would call physician-assisted suicide. We've also noticed that there's a need for stronger state review of hospital compliance after the merger. So even in the states where we can do stuff to intervene and save some services, later they break the promises and ban abortions, and we need to have some mechanism to go back in with state officials. So in conclusion, here's our plan of action for 2015. We're going to be issuing a state report card on oversight of hospital transactions in the middle of next year that will let you look at your own state and see what's going on there. Is it good? Is it bad? Can it be strengthened? We're going to develop and distribute model state oversight language that we will ask advocates to try to figure out how to get adopted in their own states. We're going to form partnerships with groups representing other affected constituencies and work to get these model policies adopted. And who are these constituencies? Well, groups that serve the poor, for example, often are losing local ERs or losing maternity services, and so they too have an interest in better oversight. Here in Louisiana, you folks have lost a lot of your hospitals without much oversight. And finally, we're going to study how these oversight systems can respond to the new emerging threats from these integrated delivery systems and accountable care organizations, in which, in some cases, Catholic hospitals are now the lead entity in an integrated delivery system that includes all the physician practices, other hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, insurance companies. It's basically the hospital merger problem on steroids, and we're going to try to figure out how to address that. So thank you for your attention. I'll be happy to take questions later on.